A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com. Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hi, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Helen.
And this is the Squiggly Careers Podcast. Each week we talk about a different topic to do with work, and we hope we help you with some ideas and some actions to support you to navigate that squiggly career with a bit more clarity, confidence and control.
And if this is the first time that you are listening to the Squiggly Careers Podcast, you've joined the party late, but never, never too late. I think this is episode 397, Sarah, I think.
You sound massively unsure about that.
No, I think it is. I'm like adding up all the pod sheets in my head that I've done, which means that I think you've actually started listening to this podcast at a very exciting time, because we're about to hit the 400 episode milestone, which
is that
means...
exciting?
Yes. Let me tell you why that is exciting,
Sarah.
Tell
me why. It sounds very arbitrary to me.
No, it is not arbitrary. It's because we will create a new Squiggly Careers pod book.
Oh, exciting.
That's exciting. Oh, it is exciting. Everybody, for every episode, we produce a pod sheet, which is a one-page downloadable summary, which I have talked to loads of people who use that now in their teams at work. And when we get to like... a centennial, is that the right thing to say? Basically every 100 episodes, we create a pod book where we put the last 100 sheets basically all together, and it just makes it kind of easier for you to, I think, use those tools together as a team or to reflect on your own. So episode 400 will release the pod book. To make sure you get that, sign up for PodMail. If you go to our website, amazingif.com, and you go to the podcast page, you'll like just scroll down a bit, you'll see you can sign up for PodMail, and you'll be one of the first people to find out about the pod book.
And this week, our topic is what gives you career competitive advantage? Sounds quite serious, doesn't it? The idea of having like competitive advantage. Well, I don't know. We don't know whether we're right or not, but we've tried to ask ourselves that question. I think it's perhaps more of a question than it is a statement. So what does give your career competitive advantage? It's a question that Helen and I have asked ourselves and really thought about the people where we feel like they are navigating that squiggly career sort of in a way that works for them. They're sort of successful by their own definition of what that success looks like. So this doesn't always mean that they are, you know, in super serious sounding jobs or got millions of people working for them, but they are definitely people who feel fulfilled, motivated, and that their work is meaningful. So they would get to a Friday and think, my time at work is well spent. And I think that's because they've got that career competitive advantage. They feel like their work is work that they want to do, and they probably are ambitious to do even more of it.
And I think maybe I've got a slightly different definition, because I, in my mind, some of the people that I think of that have got career competitive advantage, they're also people that cut through. And they are people that create opportunities. They're always people who seem to just access more stuff. You're like, oh, that's interesting that they're doing that now. Or, oh, wow. Yeah, of course that person will be doing that. But that's because of their, well, we'll find out what it is because of, but they always seem to have that like cut through and creating more opportunities when I think of those people.
Well, it's a tough one, isn't it, with squiggly careers, because we definitely want to get away from this sense of comparison. And actually the problem with using competitive advantage, perhaps even as a phrase, is when you compete, there is this sense of, well, if I win, then you lose. But I don't think we're trying to talk about that today. I don't think we're talking about competing against other people. I think it's almost like, are you doing the things that you want to be able to do? Are you cutting through in your own career? And we're sort of not worrying too much about what other people are doing or what that might look like, because cutting through in your career, I guess, will look and feel different for all of us, because careers are now so individual. So this is not, how do I win and be better and compete versus other people. And I have definitely had examples and been in organisations where it has felt more like that, that you were competing with your peers. And, you know, I've been part of programmes, learning programmes that almost set you up in that way. I think we probably both have. And then that's never great because it just sort of feels like, well, oh, but does that mean that one person is sort of worth more than somebody else, or that one person is better because they're in a different sort of position in the hierarchy or they've got a different title? So I think there's a risk here that you could go back to ladder-like thinking. But when we've asked ourselves the question, we've come up with five different areas that we hope would just really help you to succeed and create sort of your own competitive advantage. So hopefully that feels like a good compromise.
So the first idea is all about acceleration opportunities. So we think that the people that create advantage for their career are the people who get involved in things, which means they sort of move their career forward faster. And we've got a couple of different ways that we have seen that people do that. So the first thing is that people who create these acceleration opportunities are very good at spotting high profile problems and high status situations, and they put their hand up and get involved in them. So high profile problems could be, you know, a really important project that might be stalling, or something that, you know, budgets have been cut and everybody's having a bit of a panic and a grumble about it, but they're like, well, I'm going to turn that problem into an opportunity effectively for me. I'm going to be the person that helps this team move forward. And I've had one of these definitely in my career, and I didn't even fix the problem. Like I didn't fix a problem. But what I did do is, I mean, I led a team of people that did. It wasn't me that solved it. The reason that I stood out was because I kind of leaned into that problem when other people, I think, were going, no, thank you. And I was like, right, I know people, I can pull people together, I can get the smartest people in the room to get to a solution. But I wasn't the person who was the brainiest or the smartest or who came up with the ideas, but I got involved in that problem and I was seen in a very positive way because of it. And the other one, maybe more positive, is the high status situations. So like big events, things that, you know, important people in your organization are interested in. It might be a new project, it could be a new product, it could be an event or something that's strategically important to the organization. But when you spot those things and get involved in them, even you don't have to be the person that leads them, just say, oh, I'd love to get involved in this, I'm really passionate about this, I want to help. You can be part of the support team, but the fact that you're involved in those high status situations can also kind of accelerate your opportunities and gets you kind of connected to more people that are involved in them as well.
And a couple of other ideas around acceleration opportunities. Say yes to something you've not done before, because that will just definitely accelerate your progress and your growth. It will show really good things like learning agility, so your ability to apply what you know so far to something you've not done before. And both of these, actually, that Helen and I've just described, definitely take bravery, because it often feels like you do have to take a deep breath because they're quite high stakes, because you don't know if you're going to succeed. But probably what you do know is that you're going to learn. So I think your filter ends up becoming learning versus, well, do I know that I can definitely do this? And that's our final point around acceleration, is we think people who are very good at this do what we describe as look ahead learning. So their learning is not only about what they're doing today, but they also look forward and think, well, what might I need to know, or what might I need to learn for where I want to go, for what feels increasingly important in my organisation. I actually really remember somebody I worked with who could have been promoted and actually chose not to go for a promotion sort of in their area, but actually to do a sideways move, because I think she was actually really smart and she was doing some look ahead learning. And this is when sort of lots of digital things were becoming very important. And so actually she moved into a digital area, which I think was a really brave move. So she sort of turned down the obvious move and went, I'm going to do something where actually this is all about learning, because I can see that actually all things digital and technology are only going to become more important. And of course, she was absolutely right. And so it's sometimes that thing of, it might feel like you're not doing sort of the what you should do, or perhaps what other people expect you to do, but you're going, yeah, but I know this is going to accelerate my career. I might not realise it all in the next 6 months, but actually in 18 months' time, I'm going to be in an absolutely incredible position to do even more of the things that matter to me.
Well, I think actually that's a lot of what drove my move to Microsoft was a kind of look ahead learning. I was going into an industry that I wasn't very familiar with, but I knew that Microsoft were going to be very relevant and important to our future. And therefore going to that organization was a brilliant learning opportunity for me in my career. And, you know, we still kind of refer to and use lots of the insights and things we've got from there. So yeah, look ahead learning is really powerful. We do have one watch out on this though, because acceleration opportunities mean that you're going to be putting your hand up for quite a lot of new things. So it is important that, as well as, you know, being proactive about what you're saying yes to, I think you have to be really thoughtful about what you say no to as well. You don't want to be known as the Helen says yes to everything person, because I don't think that really helps. And it also means that you're not going to necessarily have as much impact because you're going to be spreading yourself too thin. So just be really aware of what things you might want to say no to create the space, to increase your impact on the other things, and also so that you're not seen as just the yes person all the time, because that also won't help you with a competitive career advantage.
So the second area that we think is useful to create career competitive advantage is having continual improvement habits. We think these people are just always work in progress. They always want to get better in a sort of relentless way, but that sort of where they don't tire out. I think they've sort of figured out, like, oh, I always want to be better, but then they're sort of not too hard on themselves at the same time. So I don't think that's an easy balance to always get right. But the things that you would expect these people to be doing, firstly, they're always getting feedback. So they understand this is not just about me. This is also about how other people see me. You know, what am I doing well and are even better ifs? And they see sort of feedback as something that is frequent, that you want to do all the time, then make it informal. You know, they'll try and do it in lots of different ways. They'll try and do it one-to-one. They'll try and do it in teams. They'll always be trying to improve projects. You know, what would make this meeting, you know, that bit better? What's one change we could make to improve? They're always kind of asking those kind of questions, I think probably both of themselves and of other people. Just this sort of, it's like a relentless like questioning of like, oh, what would 1% better look and feel like? As I say this, I sometimes feel like this might be me and might at times be a tiny bit annoying.
I mean, you did say relentless, didn't you? I just moved on from that.
Yeah, you just laughed. I could just see you on the screen laughing at my face. So that's the first area. The second one, which was interesting, when Helen and I were discussing this beforehand, we think these people are very good at creating their own operating system, which then they regularly update. So they sort of know how they get their work done and like what helps them to do that. So they don't try and adopt somebody else's operating system, but what they do is they're sort of really curious about kind of different ways to get better. Oh, I could do time blocking. Oh, brain breaks. You know, they're always collecting all of these things because they're really curious, but then they're very good at absorbing it and going, so what does that mean for me? And actually, when I talk to some people who are so good at this, people who you think, you know, they often seem to have more time, but they haven't got more time because no one's got more time. But they're also usually quite calm and they're in control. I think, you know, they're some of the characteristics I think I see of these people. And I think this is because they've got this operating system in place and it's sort of tried and tested, but they are not afraid to make changes. They're very open to going, okay, well, that's not quite working for me. Okay, so I'm gonna try something different. And so this ability to sort of always be like, well, am I using my time well? And then am I using my time in the right way?
I think it's very intentional rather than accidental. So if I think about me, sometimes I have like accidental weeks, I would say, in terms of I get to the end of the week and I've sort of just done what has automatically been provided for me to do because that's what my diary has said. And then sometimes, like this week actually, I've been much more intentional because I kind of looked at what I was doing and thought, okay, if you want to do this in a way that you're going to feel good at the end of it, there's some things that you need to do with your own operating system. So for example, I have meditated every morning this
week. Have you?
I have every morning. I'm supposed to do it twice a day. And I'll be honest, I haven't done it twice a day, but I did do it every morning because I got up and I thought, you will be able to achieve more of what you want to this week if you go into your days feeling like calm and in control.
Did it work?
And so yes, yeah. I mean, amazing. I feel like I've done quite a lot this week. I've been all right.
I know you've done a lot, but I didn't know you'd meditated. I'm like, you've just added one more thing.
Yeah, no, so I kind of got up and it just made me feel good because I feel like I've well, it makes me feel calm, but it makes me feel like I've achieved something that I committed to, and that just sets me up quite well for the day. But now, to Sarah's point, that's not how everyone wants to start their day by any means, but that's, I think, part of my operating system, and particularly in sort of peaky times, I know that that helps me. But, you know, Sarah's point about regular updating, yeah, I don't do it all the time, but it's that intentionality about how do I make sure this week works in the way that I want it to, and rather than just leaving that stuff to chance.
And then the final thing in continual improvement habits is taking a coaching approach to your own career. So this is the self-awareness point. I think people who have got career competitive advantage have got high levels of self-awareness. And also they're always seeking and searching for more data points to increase their self-awareness. So they sort of know, well, just because I feel like I know myself quite well, that doesn't mean I can't change, or doesn't mean I might, you know, you would still want to be flexible and you still want to be open. And so I do think these people are good at sort of asking questions of themselves. They'll often ask questions of other people too, but they will think, oh, so, you know, what was my highest energy moment today? What did I particularly enjoy? Oh, I seem to really find flow for that meeting or that moment. Why was that? And so I think there's quite a lot of whys going on. And when you ask why questions, you often do get to quite sort of deep rooted reflections. And I think these people are not scared of whys. Why questions can feel quite confrontational. You know, they can send our brain into that fight or flight mode, particularly if we're feeling a bit vulnerable. I probably wouldn't ask myself a why question at the end of a, you know, tough week. But I do think if you get used to asking them of yourselves, then actually you do sort of accelerate your understanding of your impact, what you want to do more of. You're just sort of questioning, aren't you? That kind of curious questioning.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com. Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The third area that we think is really important is sponsorship. And it's actually an area that we talk about in our sessions on Squiggly Career Communities. And I often see people attracted to the idea of sponsorship, but not quite knowing where to start. But in terms of why this is helpful for kind of your career advantage, is because people who do this well have other people creating opportunities for them. So you can, you know, invest in acceleration opportunities and you can create continual improvement habits, but you'll get even more stuff to do if you've got people advocating for you. And that's what sponsors do. They tend to have access and influence over areas that are important to you and your development, and they advocate for you. They talk about your strengths, they talk about your abilities, they talk about your contribution in places that you know you might not be in, or conversations you might not be part of. They're doing that job for you, and it is really powerful in terms of your advantage. If I think about mine and Sarah's work and the people that sponsor Squiggly for us, that gives us a huge amount of competitive advantage, because, you know, we have all of our lovely listeners who might post about us on LinkedIn or talk about us in their companies. And that means that we can be in so many rooms and Zooms and conversations and presentations that we couldn't be in if it was just down to us. So it is really, it's really, really powerful. We also know that it's an area that people might be like, but how do I do it? So a couple of sort of practical thoughts on how you can find yourself some career sponsorship. So we think that a good starting place is with managers or mentors. So these are people that you might already have a relationship with. It might feel kind of easier to get a mentor, and you've probably, for a lot of us, already got a manager. So they know you and know what you do in certain ways. And what we want to do is turn that relationship into one that involves advocacy, involves them talking about what you do well. They are only able to do that if you give them evidence about your impact. So that is where you might share some stats and facts about the work that you're doing. So I might say, oh, one of the things that we're really looking to do is to increase the reach of our Squiggly Careers podcast. We've already got over 4 million downloads. We've already got 400 pod sheets. We already had 5,000 people who sprinted with us last year, but we're really passionate about helping more people and I'd love to get your input on it. Having shared those stats with somebody, and I'd probably do it in, you know, slightly more, I'd probably talk around like, it boom, a little boom, bit boom. More. I probably would be like, here's some stats I want you to share. But if I had more time, I'd talk about around those points a little bit more. But my point is, I've given somebody more evidence. Oh, do you know anyone who does stuff on podcasts? Actually, yes. Like Helen Tupper and Sarah Ellis have got the Squiggly Careers podcast and .. This is what I know about them, because we've given them that information to be able to share on our behalf. If you don't give them that information, then you can't do it.
And I think the other thing to remember, whether it's a manager, a mentor, or somebody else that you're talking to, who you're sort of hoping might give you some sponsorship, I don't think it's really something you ask for. I do think it is something you earn, is that we do need to sort of repeat and remind people about not only the evidence of your impact, as Helen just described, but also I think just what you want to do more of. I think don't make the mistake of second guessing or assuming that people know that, because everyone has, you know, so much going on. You know that because you're super close to it and you are you, but you have to practice, I think, saying out loud like what you're looking for, you know, the support you need, the help you're looking for, the opportunities you're keeping an eye out for. And in that moment, someone might not be able to have something immediate. I don't think you're always expecting to say something and then straight away in return, oh yeah, great, I've got three people you should meet or three of the right opportunities. But I think by just sort of kind of lodging it with people and then keep coming back to it and say, oh yeah, well, one of the things I'm still exploring is ... which is perhaps something you talked about last time. You just never quite know when someone will come across something that's useful for you. So every time that I meet somebody who I just feel has that ability to advocate for Squiggly Careers, I will try and specifically think about, well, what are those things I want to remind those people about?
So the fourth idea that we think is important is that people who have got career competitive advantage are actually known for something, not just like the job, like their job title, but they have a talent, a skill, a behavior that people identify with them positively. I was trying to think about some of the people that I think have got that, and people that came to my mind, I was like, oh well, that's because they're really, really curious, or that's because they're just that little bit provocative. I can really identify that individual with a specific sort of trait or talent, and that is really, really powerful, because I think it makes you unique, and people might have stories that they tell that are connected to that trait or that talent. The thing that really matters with this is that you decide what you want to be known for, so that you're not like leaving this to chance. Because if somebody knows you and talks about you and sort of shares a trait or talent that you don't want to be identified with, then that's not really creating the kind of advantage that we might want for our career. So definitely start by deciding what is the thing that you want to be known for. So for example, you know, I want to be known for helping people with their careers. That's part of what I want to be known for. I want to be known as a positive person who creates energy in others. That's what I want to be known for. Once you have got that clarity, then it's important for you to think about, well, how do I make sure that I am using that and it is seen as much as possible in the job that I do on a day-to-day basis, but also outside of that job. So that could be in your organization, but outside of your job, like that could be like, you know, an internal community or cross-functional activity. It could also be outside of your organization as well, because the people that create competitive advantage, they don't limit their impact to the job that they do on a day-to-day basis. And so making sure that these things that you want to be known for are seen, used, and valued by people outside of, you know, what you do on a day-to-day basis is a really important part of it.
And just a small watch out here that we often see when people have a go at this exercise, particularly in workshops, is don't be too generic. So when you are making that decision, as Helen described, that choice about what you do want to be known for, try and avoid those big, sometimes I describe them as like these meta words. I'm just creative. I just want to be an amazing communicator. And I just think, can you ever imagine someone sort of describing you in that way with then a really specific story? Now, maybe, because there were, you know, there are always exceptions to the rule. But I do think most of the time it tends to be sort of a level down from that. So Helen didn't just sort of say, oh, I've got energy. She sort of went beyond that. She was talked about like her energy to sort of inspire other people around career development. And actually energy, there's something about that word that is quite unique. It's not something you'd say about loads of people. It's not one of those kind of meta things. So it feels very ownable. I'm always like, does this feel ownable by you? Does it feel really reflective of who you are and sort of how you show up? So just watch out for those big words and just see if you can just sort of make them a bit more yours. And if you're struggling with this and you just think, I don't know what I want to be known for, ask other people, when do you see me at my best? Sometimes I think people then use helpful phrases or words that then you can borrow. Or you might just get some things back where you think, well, not that. And that's okay too, because at least you kind of go, well, I know now that it's not that, so then it's something different. You know, sometimes having a blank piece of paper can feel too overwhelming in this area if it's maybe not something you've thought about loads. And so perhaps you just need to get some input from other people as a bit of a springboard to then go, okay, what do I do? Do I take what people are sharing with me and then try and make it more mine? Or do I take what people are sharing with me and go, well, it's not that, so therefore it's something different. So that can be useful if that one feels a bit tricky.
I was just thinking about you when you were talking,
thanks.
Just having a little daydream about Sarah.
Thanks.
Just thinking
thanks.
About Sarah. No, but I was just thinking about words that I would use to describe you at your best and how I wonder how different...
It's hard to choose because it's quite
a
long
list. Oh, yeah,
there's
so many. There's a whole encyclopedia of what I love about Sarah Ellis. No, there was just two words, Sarah.
Just two words. Okay, great.
Let's just take it back to basics. No, but I was thinking, would you say that about yourself and would it be useful for you to have that language? So what I came up with, I think you are the strengths that I often see in you over the last 12 months. I think you are thoughtfully challenging. And I don't think I would have said that about you, I don't know, before. It wouldn't be the first thing I say. But I would always say you're very thoughtful. But I think what I see, you kind of match your thoughtfulness with challenge. And I think it's a really unique trait. So, you know, someone, Sarah might have said about herself, oh, I would consider myself quite thoughtful. I don't know if she would say that. But I don't know if she would have got to thoughtfully challenging. And it's only when people maybe share their insights with you that you end up with that sort of more unique language that you can choose to use if you want to.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'll have to think about that a bit. I don't think it's probably the top thing that I'd want to be known for. Not because I think it's a bad thing. It makes me, actually, I feel very proud of that. I like, oh, I can see how that'd be useful. So you're like, well, that's useful. That's not a bad thing. I think it's probably not the thing that gives me the most energy, though. So that's why I would just pause for thought. I think I get a lot more energy from ideas and creating things. That's probably top of my list. But knowing that you've seen that, and as you said, that you hadn't seen it before, is actually just helpful data for my development.
You can have that.
Thanks. And the final area is, as well as being known for something, which was number four, number five is know what's needed. So this is reading the room, or sometimes Teams/Zoom, depending on what you're using. It's situational sensing. It's adapting enough, but without losing a sense of who you are or pretending to be somebody that you're not, which is never a good thing. That's why I always think it's like adapting enough. And we think a really good way to do this, because I think this is a hard skill, often one that gets described around like leadership. Oh, we need you to be good at kind of judgment and situational sensing. But a good way to get started is to ask, don't assume. So rather than sort of desperately trying to read a room and you just think, well, like, how does that even happen? If you use a kind of quick question very early on as part of a meeting or a one-to-one or part of a project, actually, if you then really listen to how people respond to that quick question, I think you get some quick clues. You get some quick clues as to what's most important to that other person, what's on their mind at the moment, but also how are they feeling? How are they turning up? How are they showing up? And then you can sort of adapt accordingly. So Helen and I were saying, we both have slightly different questions, but I will often ask somebody, what's most useful for us to talk about together today? And I meet quite a lot of people for the first time or people I perhaps don't know that well in our learning partnership. So lots of companies all across the world. And actually how people respond to that is really revealing. So someone might say, and I do get a real range of responses, oh, I'd just love to find out a bit more about Amazing If. Should we just introduce ourselves? So quite sort of relaxed, explorative. We just want to find out. Other people might say, right, we've got an event in 3 months' time. I want you to talk to me very specifically about how you do a session on feedback. And actually what they really want is a summary of like my key ideas and thoughts on feedback, because they want to get a feel for, does that fit with what they're trying to do? So they're very, very zoomed in. So that first response, much more zoomed out. The second response, much more zoomed in. Now, if I had just gone straight into that conversation, I could have started from completely the wrong point, kind of unwittingly and unknowingly, and therefore I'm less useful and I sort of reduce my impact. What do you ask, Helen?
Same objective, but different question. I often ask people like how their week's going, like I did today in a meeting. I'll just say, oh, how's the week going before we get started? And someone will either go, yeah, it's fine, thanks. So first day, and I'm like, you don't want to chat. Like, I got it. You don't
I wouldn't ask that question because I don't want to chat. I'm like, yeah so let's move on.
It's so funny. But if I didn't know you, I get a very quick read of, Sarah is not the... like, oh, let's chat about a funny thing that's happened this week. That's not how I'm going to build rapport with Sarah. There is something else that will help me to do that, but it's not, oh, do you like hummus as well? Or whatever random things that I might say in a meeting or whatever. It's not the time for the random version of me. And then sometimes people go, oh my gosh, it's been amazing. I did this thing. And then suddenly you have a way to connect with them. And then you then kind of go, okay, that's been brilliant. I'm so glad we chatted. So today, these are some things that I'd had on my agenda. What's on yours? And you can kind of, you know, go back to what the point of the meeting actually is. But I often ask that kind of like, how's your week going? Or, oh, it's Monday. What are you excited about this week? And someone will be like, this meeting. And I'll be like, okay, let's focus on this meeting. So I think whatever your question is the point of early on in a conversation, if you can ask a question that helps you to see, as Sarah said, what mood people are in and how they want to kind of connect with you, then you can adapt to them. We're obviously not trying to be career chameleons. You do want to be yourself. But I think there's slightly subtle ways that you can adapt that can help you to do that. And one of the subtle ways that you can do is you can kind of match how you show up in that meeting to what they share in terms of their language. So if you have people that are very sort of detail and deadline orientated, you know, they're talking in their conversation, they're like, well, by the end of the week there are three things that we need to achieve, that gives me an insight into this person likes structure and clarity because that's what helps them to feel in control. And so I need to, you know, adapt what I'm talking about so that it gives that person, you know, what they need from me in that meeting. Whereas if someone else is saying, you know, some of their words are like, oh, well, we're sort of exploring a few different things and there's a couple of different options that we're thinking about, and clearly me being too detail and data orientated isn't quite what they need in that moment. They might want me to give my perspective and maybe to share some different ideas and maybe to talk about what it would take for us to prioritize some of those things. So just picking up on some of those words that people might say can help you to make some sort of subtle adjustments to how you show up and really how you know what's needed.
Do you know what I was just imagining there? If everyone, yeah, this stuff can sometimes sound a bit like Machiavellian, can't they? Imagine like if everybody turns up and everyone tries to do it at the same time, and then you just, no one goes anywhere because you're like, oh, well, Helen wants to like build a relationship. Sarah wants to develop some ideas. Somebody else wants to be efficient and have clarity. And then we're all there just trying to like read the room. And then you could end up with like a really weird, like, oh, but then no one does anything.
Well, imagine people trying to have meetings with us, because we would both want different things. Because I kind of want to have a nice, I want to have a nice relationship with someone. So I kind of like to find a moment.
You
want to
make friends. I'm like,
I kind of want to make friends. But then I do like, you know, clarity. I do like to, and
you switch from one to the other, I would say,
very
incredibly quickly.
Yeah.
For somebody who wants to make friends with everyone, you sort of want to make friends, I would say, for 5 minutes. Let's make friends for 5 minutes. And then actually you're incredibly... like, well, let's now do the thing.
Whereas you're like, you don't want to make friends,
no.
But then you don't want to close a conversation down. So like an example of this would be the length of a meeting. So I go half an hour in the diary, 5 minutes to make friends, 25 minutes to talk about, well, 20 minutes to talk about it, and then 5 minutes to like get clear on who's doing what when. Whereas, so, and I'll be very driven by this meeting is supposed to end at this time. Whereas Sarah, not her intent is definitely not to make friends in a meeting, but your curiosity and your connection and your thoughtfulness, actually, you would hate to end a meeting just because that's what it said in the diary, if that wasn't the right thing to do for that conversation in that moment.
I don't think I have ever used the words. Someone used them with me today. I have a hard stop. I really don't.
You never said that.
I hate that. Well, for a start, I hate that phrase. I'm like, that's an awful thing to say to somebody.
I literally WhatsApped that to someone this week who wanted to meet me.
I think it's really. Yeah, I'm like, I'm never going to say that.
What would be a Sarah way of saying that? I've got another meeting at 4. Would you ever say that?
Yeah, I might. I might say, oh, I'm afraid I've got another meeting at 4, so I'm going to have to go. But I would even find that quite hard. It's just funny, really, because you know I'm not like super nice, but for whatever reason I think because I'm like interested and I want to give people space and like I want to learn about whatever they've got to say. But yeah, someone did say it to me, and I think I find it a bit like, oh, okay, is that you signaling to me that you want me to go faster or that you want to talk about something? I'm sort of a bit like, oh, I don't know what you want me to do with that, because I'm very happy to just like go through an agenda. I tell you what though, sometimes when you do meet with people from different cultures, we were quite a few people over in the US, I would say their approach, they've never said to me, I've got a hard stop, but I have never had a meeting run over, because I think you'd be amazing in the US. So they turn up and they're like,
trying to get rid of me.
They're like Sarah, and they're so enthusiastic and really like encouraging for sort of 2 to 3 minutes, like really nice, like rapport. And then they're like, okay. And then they've got an agenda and it's very directive. And I'm like, oh, this is so efficient. It's amazing.
I love it.
So yeah, you know, but it would make me laugh if you got different like people who listen to Squeaky Careers and then everyone came together into sort of a weird melting pot. But I guess realistically it never happens. This is just about being smart, right? Do a bit of smart sensing.
It is. I love our little end of podcast tangent. This is being recorded at the end of a week, everybody. Very expected tangent.
Can you tell this is now Friday at 5:21?
So because my job is to create clarity, everybody, let me create some clarity.
Go for it.
There are 5 ideas for action that we have talked about. So acceleration opportunities, create continual improvement habits, seek out some sponsors, be known for something, and also know what is needed. And we will summarise all of that in the pod sheet so that you've got a very simple way of reflecting and referring back to it. And don't forget, episode 400, the pop book is coming, and so it'll be included in there for you as well.
But thank you so much for listening. That's everything for this week, and we'll be back with you again soon. Bye for now.
Bye everyone.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
The secret to summer-ready skin is here. Osea's number one best-selling Andaria Algae Body Oil, clinically proven to instantly improve skin elasticity and transform dry skin to silky, soft, and unbelievably glowing. Its signature scent of freshly squeezed grapefruit, cypress, and mango mandarin transports you to sun-kissed summer days. Get healthy, glowing skin for summer with clean, vegan skincare from Osea. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com.